think about what you sell, one of the reasons that service providers can be really good is if they're selling and they know what they're able to do. And you see this with business owners or CEOs. There's a reason why they are the best salesperson. They have deep levels of conviction about what they do. And I tell people very often, the person with the most conviction wins, right? If they have great conviction and they're not scared of losing the business, they can do a great job.
Welcome to the Standout Business Show, where it's all about making a bigger difference by doing business differently. I'm Brad Powell, and today we are talking about selling the invisible and asking the question, what are the best practices to sell your services? Because here's the thing, if you're a professional service provider, you probably have some resistance when it comes to being a salesperson. I mean, most of us, and I'm in this camp, we don't want to come off as being this salesy weirdo. And in your experience, no matter how much experience you have in the work that you do, you probably don't have a lot of experience in sales. It's just not in your core wheelhouse. So here's the thing about service providers and their challenge with sales. You know, they are not comfortable with talking about or asking for money. And often this whole thing about how do you build a relationship quickly and build rapport with potential clients, that's a trick that you need to learn. And because of what we know and because of our background, we tend to overgive and we're over-educating our potential clients. We're telling them all these things that it's not really part of sales. It doesn't really work very well. And of course, not knowing exactly when and how to ask for your business without looking pushy, without being the stereotypical used car sales guy. Not to diss all the used car salespeople who do a good job out there. But to answer some of this, I have brought sales trainer extraordinaire Adam Boyd onto the Stand Up Business Show today, and he's going to share how you can speak to your target audience so that they understand your difference and your position and the value that you bring. So listen up. We're going to take a deep dive into how you can create a repeatable process for earning new business. And with that, let's start the show. All right, here we go. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brad. It's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And so to start us off, in your own words, tell us why you think selling a service can be so difficult.
Well, that's a great question. It's incredibly emotional for a lot of service providers. When you think about attorneys, you think about consultants, they could be marketing, they could be agencies. It just gets really tied up with people's identity.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, associated with that is it's you providing the service. Like, people are going to work with you.
Right.
So you have to build a certain level of trust. If somebody's going to hire you over someone else, it's sort of like, well, why should I hire you? Because there's 15 other people in my town who are offering that same service. And then aside from that, a lot of service providers are offering some kind of shift or change or transformation in the client that they're serving. There's some desired outcome that the person is looking for. And this is the thing that you offer. And that has a certain value that isn't particularly tangible. It's not like buying a new car.
When you think about what you sell, one of the reasons that service providers can be really good is if they're selling and they know what they're able to do. And you see this with business owners or CEOs. There's a reason why they are the best salesperson. They have deep levels of conviction about what they do. And I tell people very often, the person with the most conviction wins, right? If they have great conviction and they're not scared of losing the business, they can do a great job.
Yeah, sure. I just underlined conviction and don't be attached to the outcome.
Which is hard because if you're in a slow season or you're trying to make payroll because you've grown your business and there isn't enough lead flow coming in, you'll do whatever it takes to win that. And then you start to get really anxious. And you have these messages in your head about money and what we can ask and what we can say and can't do that gets in the way. But I want to come back to something you said about value. Sometimes it's intangible. One of the things that we have to do is lead our potential client to discover that value. Now, this is harder in B2C environments, but in B2B environments, it can very often be done. And this is the process, it's what I call quantification, where we talk to somebody about what's at stake financially. Now, this might be what they've done up to this point and what they've spent, which is a sunk cost. It could be what they're missing in terms of efficiencies. It could be what they could potentially gain. And that's in some of it's invisible. Some of it, we've got it written down somewhere. And what happens is value gets attached to that number. But the problem is sometimes service providers, sometimes salespeople in any industry will tell the number, they'll push a number, and people don't ever believe your numbers or a salesperson's numbers. There are sometimes that they do. But when we quantify and we help, we draw out of them what they believe is at stake financially, either in the future or what they've spent in the past or missed in the past, that becomes the description of value for them. That's what they're moving toward, and it enables them to justify working with you. They will choose you emotionally, they'll justify it intellectually because we've quantified.
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, the idea that you want to let people discover for themselves what the, you know, what the practical value is, because you're right, people do self-justify. And it's interesting because just last week I was talking to a person who's really good at sales, but we were talking about from a marketing perspective. And her line was, you know, in your marketing, instead of going out there and sort of banging on doors and, you know, finding people and having people feel like you found them, right, do things so that they feel like they've discovered you.
Right.
It was really true in sales as well.
Yeah. And it's really, really hard, especially for people who are really astute and quick mentally. They will see something before the prospect does. The skill is having the patience to ask a series of 10 or 12 or 15 questions so that the other person's light bulb goes off. You know, anyone with kids knows it's better to get them to discover it rather than tell them. When they feel like it's their decision, they move faster. There's a great scene in the movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I don't remember all the characters' names. I remember the young woman, her name's Tula, and she wants to go to computer school because it's a way to meet this guy. And she goes to her mother, and her mother says, you know, they've got to get the father's buy off. And the mother says, you know, the father's the head of the household, but the mother is the neck, and I turn him wherever I want.
Let me tell you something, Tula. The man is the head, but the woman is the neck. And she can turn the head any way she wants.
What happens is the seller, even the service provider, whomever, needs to be a neck, but it requires a level of patience to ask a series of questions so that somebody goes, oh, I see it, right? You can't tell them. They don't, again, like I said earlier, they don't believe what you tell them.
Yeah, right. I think this goes back to what I was saying in the intro in terms of service providers. We tend to over-educate.
Yes.
And it's like, hey, I know all the answers here. And if right. I just show you that I know all the answers, that's going to obviously demonstrate that right. I'm terrific. And of course, you're going to want to come and buy my thing.
Yeah. Well, and think about it, right? You've been doing what you do for years and years and years. In a 30-minute or a 45-minute meeting, how much are you going to be able to distill so that they understand it? I do a lot of work with attorneys. And I tell them, like, look, you're not a constitutional law professor right now. You are trying to win business. And people didn't come to you to get an education on torts. They didn't come to you to get a primer on the tax code. They came to you usually for morphine. They're trying to get pain relieved. In some cases, they want a hit of dopamine. But more than likely, they want morphine. They want the pain to go away. And your job's to do that and to talk to them about that. It's not to talk to them about the chemistry of the drug they're about to take. You'll have a small percent who want that, but they'll typically tell you.
Yeah, I like that. Dolat the morphine. That's a good one.
I mean, isn't that what we're all selling, right? I mean, we look at Madison Avenue, they get it, right? There's a famous Cadillac commercial. I think it had Kate Walsh in it. It's from 2008. And I sometimes show it to clients. And I say, what's Cadillac selling?
In today's luxury game, the question isn't whether or not your car has available features like a 40 gig hard drive that isn't about sunroofs or Sapeliwood accents, pop-up nav screens, or any of that. No, the real question is, when you turn your car on, does it return the favor?
They're selling status. They're selling emotion. They're selling a feeling of success or sexiness. They're not selling the engine, the parts, how it's built, and the color of the car. They're selling a feeling. And they get it. They spend billions of dollars a year selling cars, computers, everything, right? Even McKinsey and Bain are emotional purchases. But people seem to forget that when they sell law, consulting, tax advice, financial services. It's still an emotional purchase.
And that touches on sort of a mindset thing. And so what do you think are limiting beliefs around the process of selling, or just a myth that, you know, the general public has kind of bought into around what it means to be in the sales mode?
Right.
Yet your whole work really challenges.
Great question. I'll tell you a couple stories. One, I grew up in the South, and there are certain social norms you follow. One is you say, bless their heart, when you're saying that person's an idiot. Two, you just don't talk about money. You don't ask about it. You don't ask what things cost. And I learned this really early. I asked my grandfather when I was 7 what a gift he bought me cost. And I was told, you don't ask that. So I use that to say that there's a lot of limiting beliefs around money and talking about it, what we can and can't do. I have one client, they're one of the largest home builders in America, and they have to talk to people about money. And there's a lot of limiting beliefs about money, and it gets in the way. Sometimes it's whether or not we can talk about it. Sometimes it's our own beliefs about money. Here's a quick example just from this week. I was talking to a woman who had a $650,000 product to sell. The person who came to her came with a $1.2 million budget. So the seller thought, we won't have anything good enough if she's wanting to spend $1.2 million. But there were other people that she worked with who said, wouldn't she be excited to save $500,000? Right? So that's money's a big one. The other one is what the rules are in terms of how you talk to people about doing business. I'll give you a couple examples. I will talk to people and I'll say, here's how you push back. You need to push back. And people will say, you can do that? There aren't really any rules. We believe there are these rules. We believe there are these things we have to say and do. But you're allowed to kind of figure it, like make it up as you go. And people would be more direct. They'd be more honest. They would get to the point more. They would get more information if they didn't abide by these rules. So one of them is, if you're in a B2B environment, you're interacting with someone who doesn't actually make the decision. It might be a mid-level manager, a director, but there's someone above you that you've got to get to. And what will happen is, we will routinely tell people, just call the person at the top. And they'll say, well, you can't do that. This person will be upset. Well, this person's not going to be at your house on Thanksgiving Day. And the truth is, it's highly unlikely that person's going to buy from me anyway. I got to get somebody up top to do it. Because people down here, very often in an organization, they're in cover your ass mode. People up top are like, we need to get results for shareholders or the department. And so what I will tell them is, go up top. And just, I'll even tell the person I'm talking to, hey, I need to talk to so-and-so. How do we make that happen? Or I'm going to make a call. I tell them. It's one of those two things has to happen if we're going to get business. So there has to be a willingness to break rules. Those are some limiting beliefs. And then there's limiting beliefs on, you know, people think they're naturally good. Well, I'm naturally a salesperson. Really? I'm not naturally an attorney. I'm not naturally a doctor. The best sellers, and you've probably seen some, Brad, they have a process. They have a set of skills. They know what to use when. And look, it's not rocket science, but it's something that they get good at over time. Like, people who argue have learned a set of rules. People who are really good at selling have process. They have principles they follow. And it sounds really self-serving for me to say it, but I've just watched it over the years. Some people kind of have a natural charisma and they get enough business. That's great. That's not most people. So there are some of these assumptions and beliefs around money, around rules, around being naturally good that get in people's way. And it costs them a lot of money. It creates a lot of stress and their business doesn't become what they would want it to.
Yeah, I really like the whole rule breaking part. I mean, we're so stuck in the mode of you have to wait your turn, or you can't just go to door number one. You have to go to door number five. And then gradually work your way up kind of thinking. And there's a really great book by James Altucher, which is called Skip the Line.
He's great.
And he's just like a living example of somebody who's done it repeatedly again and again, just figured out how to go exactly where he wants to go with his ambition and sort of everything from being a comedian to being a chess master. And like, how do you get there without what everybody tells you to do, which is like, oh no, you have to go over here and do hours and hours of this and that and whatever. And he's like, no, I don't have to do all that. I can go right here.
Let me give you an example of this. There are a lot of companies, like engineering firms fall into this. Sometimes commercial architecture firms, big companies will fall in, like certain types of services will fall into a world where they get asked to bid or they get an RFP. When it comes to RFPs, everybody believes you just have to do what they tell you. Well, the truth about RFPs is very often the issuing company has already decided on whom they want. They're just going through this process to kind of check, keep these people in line and find something out. More often than not, they know whom they've wanted. They've invited them to bid. They've reached out to them. They're known. They've done business together. Doesn't mean you're not going to win some. One of the things that I've told companies to do is, hey, look, you get an RFP and you didn't ask for it and it's unsolicited, do two things. And these break the rules. One, RFP comes, you tell them you don't have enough information. Say, hey, I'd love to respond, but we don't have enough information. If the issuing company says, what do you need? Now the tables have shifted and you've got a little bit of leverage. If they say, no, nope, that's all you get, you weren't going to win it anyway. The other thing to do is you look at the deadline and say, we'd love to answer, we don't have enough time. And you just say, we're going to politely decline. Now, if they had to go get three people, they had to go get three bids or five bids, what will happen is if you don't respond, they got to go find somebody else, which maybe they can do. But what happens is if they come back to you and say, what do you need? How much more time do you need? You know, you've got a legitimate shot and you can start to enter into a process. And from there, we encourage firms to say, look, we need all this information. And if they can't get it, just to step out of it, because they're going to waste hundreds of hours, at least 100 hours, most times on most RFPs, if they think they're going to win it, investing in that. And just think, what's your average employee making and multiply that by, you know, 50, 100, 200 hours? That's real. So we want to break the rules and get out of that.
Well, you know, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile and your main headline says, you're spending a ton of money on leads. let me help solve that. So that's true for a lot of people. That's their current situation. That's also their current pain point. So this is a point of distinction. Like, what's your main approach to helping people like really reverse the spending costs that they're doing on lead generation?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you asking. The reason I went there was people seem to think, well, if I get more qualified leads, my problems will go away. And the truth is, if people are reaching, look, there's sometimes you're spending a lot on Google ads and you're getting a bunch of garbage come through. That happens. It doesn't happen to everybody and it doesn't happen all the time. What happens for a lot of people is they're not really good at qualifying. And let me give you a quick example. And then I'm going to get into like specifically answering your question. We were working with a law firm. The lead flow had gone through the roof. And so now the attorney, she was a solo, she was overwhelmed. She's like, holy crap. They weren't converting. They were setting the meetings. Like, they were, leads were coming in. We were setting the meetings. She was holding the consult, but they weren't closing. We looked at what was happening and she told me they don't have money. they don't have money, they're not qualified. And I always question that because consumer debt levels in this country are through the roof. We find what we find money to pay for what we want, right?
Yeah.
We just are in a different place than a lot of people think. So somebody says, I don't have money or you're too expensive. It's really not the real issue. It's, I'm not going to work hard enough to pay you. So what happened was we made one shift in her process and we gave the intake person, we had them ask a different question after they set the meeting. Same leads, same people coming in. We just kind of looked at what wasn't working down the line with the attorney and we changed on the front end. And she called me back like the next week. She's like, I've closed 7 clients in the last week. I'm not promising that to anybody who ever calls me, but we just made some shifts in the process. Well, here's what we really do with most people. Here's what most people do when they get on a sales call. They maybe ask a few questions. They tell you about themselves. They start educating you. Here's what attorneys do. Attorneys will tell you where they clerked, right? I want you to think about it. Brad, most Americans cannot name half the Supreme Court justices. The highest court in the land. And now some attorney is telling you where he or she clerked at the state level. And like, if you can't name all 9 Supreme Court justices, why is this going to impress you? Right? Yeah. You're like, okay, I guess that's great. But we put in a process that's built around how people work. And we say, look, you're going to talk a lot less. You're going to ask a lot more questions. You're going to listen a lot more. You're going to, we use some tools called quantifying. We anchor, what I call open a loop at the beginning of the call to say, hey, here's what we're going to do today. What do you want to get out of this? Here's how this is going to end. And we close at the end and then we give them a process to talk about money. So we build a structure for how they run their consults. So if they're going off the rails, we can diagnose where and why, and they know why. And the structure doesn't take long and they start getting it and kind of have to tweak it. Then I give them a series of tools like, and I've learned these from other coaches, trainers, consultants. Chris Voss, who's come on the scene lately, has been really helpful in terms of helping people understand how to communicate. So we focus on connection and communication. We focus on a structure. We focus on finding people's compelling reasons to do something. And we can't assume it. They have to say it. You'll hear me say periodically, if someone doesn't say it, it doesn't exist, right? Tree falls in the woods, no one there to hear it. I don't know what happens, but if they don't say it when you're selling, it does not exist. And then we show them how to wrap meetings up in a very casual way. And one of the most basic things we tell them is, hey, do you want my help? Like that's our closing question. Do you want my help? But everything has to be built up to that point. And then over time, we lay in more skills. Those take longer. I haven't found a way to like get that into people's brain really fast yet.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good process. I mean, the whole thing about just from the basic point of helping your prospect discover for themselves, you know, where they're at and where they need to go and what their pain point is and what might be possible to just not be in the situation that they're in anymore. If they're starting to think along those turns and then you simply say, hey, you know, would you like me to help you with all of that?
Yeah.
After you've built this rapport, yes.
Look, and for your listeners, what a lot of people do is like, they say they have some sort of like push away. It's like, all right, Brad, call me if you need anything, or I'll be here, or here's a link, sign up. What they really need to do is invite you into the conversation, say, do you want my help? Do you want to do this? The people listening, if they will start doing that, this isn't a scientific number, they'll see a 5% bump in closing rates just asking that question.
Yeah, that's good. So you guys listening to this, write that down.
Hey, it'll make you some money and you can give Brad the credit.
Right. All right. Well, we are getting right at the end of our time here today. It goes by super fast. This is really good conversation. There's tons more we could talk about. And in fact, if someone would like to talk to you more and or connect with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
They can go to my website, thenorthwoodgrp.com, and you can get on my email. I'm not as consistent. It's sometimes 2 times a month, sometimes every 3 weeks. They can email me. I'm adam@thenorthwoodgrp.com. Or I post daily except for weekends on LinkedIn. They can follow me. I'm Adam P. Boyd. I reference college football, my kids, and other things that I find amusing in talking about this material. So they're welcome to reach out, follow me. And periodically I speak and try to let people know where that's going to be.
Okay, great. That's great. Well, I'll make sure that links to your website and to your page on LinkedIn are in the show notes.
Awesome.
Adam, thanks so much for coming on today. This has been great.
Brad, it's been wonderful. You're great. And look forward to talking to you soon, okay?
And I just want to remind you that if you'd like to go get the entire archive of The Standout Business Show, just go to standoutbusiness.show and it's all there. You can binge to your heart's content all the audio, all the video, all the links to all the different resources. And we go live every Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And until the next time, so long.